You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Hey guys, welcome to episode 67 of the Reinvest Podcast. We are well on our way into a new year, 2024. Which has the potential to be an interesting one with a presidential election.
Yeah,
I think people are they're watching the Fed to see what interest rates do from a business perspective, which has a trickle down in every area. Geopolitical stuff. I mean, there's a lot going on this year, as there always is.
It's going to be the best year ever.
I love. Well, and you know, a lot of it is what we make of it. And, you know, being in a community like ours, Northwest Ohio, the Midwest, I think it's easy to get overwhelmed by some of the stuff going on at a macro level. But there are some really exciting things happening in our community. And that really is kind of the goal of today's episode. So we are here with Tracy Sanchez. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, how are you guys?
Thanks for coming into the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
I was trying to figure out how do we describe who you are, because there's not just one way to do that.
You wear many hats.
You do. And we were talking off camera a little bit about your legacy in the community, and you know, legacy up to this point, and then the chapter that's ahead, and some of the cool stuff happening that you've got your hand in. So give our guests a little intro to who you are and what you do at a high level, and then we'll get into some of the particulars.
Sure. So Tracy Sanchez, born and raised in Lima, Ohio. I've lived here my whole life. I was raised in Bath Township, moved into the city of Lima a few years ago. I have three grown children and five grandchildren with one more on the way.
Wow.
Congrats.
Wow. So would you say that Bath is probably like one of the best places around Lima to live in?
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. It was nice, though. It was nice.
Because I'm in Bath right now.
Are you in Bath? Bath, yeah. Bath's a good place.
I'm not in Bath. So, boo.
No, I'm just kidding. No, you didn't make it. So you've got a growing family, raised your kids here in Lima, and you're a business owner. So tell us a little bit about your business.
I am. So it's family-owned business. My mother and father started it back when I was in high school. One of my dad's friends needed pallets, and that's how we started.
Wow.
Have grown. So my mother and father, we got to retire at a very early age. I think they were in their late 40s. My brother and sister and I had taken over for them.
Wow.
And then a few years ago, probably 25 years ago, my brother wanted out. He moved to Florida full-time, worked on a golf course. That's what he always wanted to do. My sister, she became a massage therapist. She wanted out. So wow. I ended up buying both of them out and have been the sole owner now probably for almost 15 years.
Oh, wow. So Lima Pallet Company, and it started just your dad meeting a need for a fellow business friend providing pallets. So what has it grown into today? What all is it that you guys do at the pallet company?
So we kind of have a niche in the business now in the pallet world. We have grown from just family members. Now my son-in-law still works for me. My son works for me, my oldest son. But we've grown now into about 54 employees, 55 on any given day.
Wow.
So
wow.
It has grown. We have our own fleets of trucks and trailers. So we have about 100 trailers that are on the road, and probably 100 plus customers. So we've grown the business over the years.
Is it refurbishing pallets, or is it making brand new pallets?
It's both. So we refurbish, we build from scratch, we do a lot of customizing. So that's kind of our niche in the business. And then we also do a heat treat pallet, which is exported all over the world. So we ship into the European countries, Mexico, Canada, Australia, you name it. Our pallets go all over. So we from Lima, Ohio. We have a special license. So if our pallet is sitting in Mexico, they can actually bring it back and find it right at Lima Pallet Company.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah, it's I love getting to know those little those that's happening in our community right now. Just that global reach from a small community like ours in Northwest Ohio, which is awesome. It's not just the pallet company though. I know you have there's another niche that you guys are meeting, kind of in the workforce aspect of what you do there. And that's really one of our focuses today, is to kind of bridge the gap for people between what happens. We always hear like, okay, when you help others, I think it was Zig Ziglar said, if you help people get to where they want to go, they'll help you get to where you want to go. And so there's that law of reciprocity. You know, when you give something, it comes back. And I think it gets talked about in leadership all the time, but we don't always have the context from someone like yourself to say, for decades, what does it look like? What's the compound effect of that when somebody's been living that out over all that time?
Sure. And what I like to talk about, years ago when my mother and father first, we started expanding and we had moved a new brick road. So we're real close to the Allen Corrections Facility. Mm. And we started becoming a second chance employer. So probably 85% of our population or our employees are previous felons.
Wow.
And it was really all about giving second chances. I always tell everyone that no one grows up saying, hey, I want to grow up to be a felon.
Right.
It's usually childhood issues that right. happen, whether and they're in survival mode while most of us are learning.
Right.
So what I found out fairly quickly was when you give people a second chance and you invest a little bit of time and effort in them that they never had growing up, that they can become productive citizens. And what we all need is workforce. So yep. if you can, and we're always struggling, you know, it's always about going to college and getting the degree. And,
right.
and that's not always necessary. I mean, there's always a place for everyone. So it's really just helping to develop that person and to get them to become productive citizens.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever been felt more than now. If you've ever tried to get a quote for flooring or any kind of like trade skilled related service that you as the consumer are relying on, the vacuum that you're running into is an illustration that we will always need that demographic of workforce.
Sure. It's a skilled labor force.
Yeah.
So, and that's, what I did find out, a lot of these, even people, so you're not going to retire from Lima Pallet Company. I mean, that's hard, brutal work.
Right.
So what we did find out, a lot of them don't have GEDs. So we try to get them, their high school diploma. A lot want to go to college. They're really good with their hands. So we got some that became pipe fitters,
wow.
Plumbers, electricians.
Which in our area, I mean, that's a great job. Like
absolutely.
If you're a pipe fitter at the refinery, I mean, there's just,
you
those
can
are
make good
money.
Jobs.
Yeah, you can retire doing that.
Absolutely. They're six digit figures
just
like everybody else. And it's just small skills that you have to
so
have.
So some employers wouldn't like the idea of being a stepping stone. Like what are your thoughts on that? I mean, if someone's not going to retire with you, right? Because I mean, talk to other employers and they're looking for those lifetime commitments. From people or want that, or that's a testimony of their success, but you're
so Garrett,
more of a
funny thing is, even though we feel that we're a stepping stone, I've got several employees that have been with us for 30 some years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because once again, it's how you treat your people.
Yeah,
we're
right.
family for a lot of them. They're comfortable. They're supervisors. They've worked their way up.
Wow.
So we've got some that will retire from Lima Pallet,
that's
even
crazy.
Though you would never expect that.
So that is a testimony of success that way. Wow. Wow. So that's been your heart. I think one of the things that you were helping me see was you saw that you guys were able to kind of create this ecosystem of giving people second chances within the pallet company. And then at some point, and walk us through this journey, you started to ask the question, can I do this in other areas? Can I do this in the community in other areas, just outside of our little business nucleus? So what was your progression then of kind of helping drive that conversation and bring that vision for other people in the community?
Sure. So the vision, I have 54 employees now.
That's a lot. And I just want to say
that is a lot.
That it sounds really good doing like, hey, second chances. This also comes with a lot of mess. It's messy. People are messy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's every day you go in with a plan and it never works out.
It goes out the window.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just think when you have that many people with that much baggage that they come along, even though that, they've been rehabilitated and they come out, they're still trying to make their way in life.
Sure. We all are. Yeah.
Yeah. Budgeting money and where do I live? And a lot of places, felons can't find places to live a lot of times. So we started buying up housing and putting them into houses that they could actually become homeowners. So, I don't charge them interest. I would pay cash for a house, let them help fix it up. So they had pride in what they're doing. You wouldn't believe how many, we probably have 7 or 8 that have actually own their own homes now.
Wow.
They're proud owners.
Yeah.
They take care of them. So those people,
wow.
They're doing really, really well.
Yes.
For me, it was if we could do this at a local level in my little small business, Lima Pallet, what could we do if we could take it to the community?
Right.
And that's part of, you know, with the Central District, we have the maker space that they're calling, and actually they're going to change that name because it is evolving into more and more things. We have a lot of local industries that are involved in that, big companies. The Chamber Foundation actually has leased that whole building. Wow. And they're going to be doing a lot of programming. Awesome. And I have to hand it to, I don't know if any of you know, Chris Henderson from Steady Does It Mechanical.
Yeah, okay.
Plumbing service. Yeah. So he actually is running in that building right now, plumbing classes free of charge.
Wow.
Pulling some maybe kids that don't know, you know, what path they're going to take, where they're going to go, maybe getting ready to get in trouble off the streets. He's pulling these kids in, and his classes are, you know, basically sold out. He has no more room for them.
Wow.
And teaching them just basic plumbing skills. Mm-hmm. So once again, you know, that vision of, you know, how can we lift people? How can we keep them from getting on the streets? How can we keep kids from getting in trouble? And then it's the workforce development piece of it. You've got big companies that are coming in now, and they're like, look, we have these jobs that we can't fill.
Right.
And they're kind of connecting now within this building on Central Avenue and saying, hey, can we train our controllers in your space?
Wow.
We'll provide the instructors, you know, we'll pay to have this, but we need to get into the community. Yep. And if you think about it, how intimidating is it to go out to like the refinery and walk in and try to get a job? If you're somebody now, anybody could probably work there, but it's having those skills. So if we could take it to the neighborhoods where people feel comfortable coming in, walking through the door, learning a job, and then they will assess, teach, and then you're guaranteed a job when you walk out of the place.
So I think it at a high level, again, everybody likes the idea. It gets talked about a lot, but the execution and the follow through is difficult. And I don't know if it's because there's a mentality of saying, well, I can't make money at it and be philanthropic or altruistic or, you know, be value focused. But I mean, anybody who knows you in this community knows that that's not true. You have found success in it and being able to drive those values.
And it is, you know, sometimes it's not always all about the money.
Right.
You know, it's about lifting up a community and what can we do to make our community better. I sit on several boards, and through those boards, I've learned so much about our community and about how people operate and who people are and what is important. And, you know, one of the biggest issues Lima has had is livability.
Mm. And what do you mean by that, just for somebody listening?
So, you know, for instance, and I think I used this example earlier, you know, I went to a big company when I was fundraising for the amphitheater, and we were looking at their org chart. And it's the first time I've ever walked into this company, even though I did business with them for pallets, never got in and actually saw, you know, the plant manager. And when you're in, you're talking to them. And the first question I started asking as I was fundraising for the amphitheater was, you know, where do you live? And he said, well, I lived in Findlay. And I'm like, well, why do you live in Findlay? He's like, well, because I couldn't talk my wife, you know, living in Lima, there was nothing to do. In Findlay, there's places to go, things to do. Yeah. So
it's both perception of Lima, but then it's also just the lack of amenities and
the things to do. So, and then you looked at his org chart, and then I'm sitting in there with all these high level, you know, managers and supervisors, and not one of them lived in Lima, Ohio.
Wow.
You know, they all lived outside.
Wow.
So then the light bulb goes on, and we've talked about this for several years. It's not just my light bulb. You know, this is the whole community talking about, you know, the hospitals are trying to recruit doctors and nurses, and, you know, what can we do so that people want to live and stay in Lima?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where the Central District, you know, started coming in. The amphitheater was the first big, you know, a
downtown thing. Kind of project that was going to really steer a new direction for what people used to perceive as a very blighted area.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that was changing. And you were instrumental in a part of the amphitheater.
Well, it's part of the fundraising. I mean, it's definitely a Rotary. Rich Rudolph was our brainchild on the whole event. It was
We need to get him on the podcast too, so maybe you can help us with that.
Sure, absolutely. You catch him between Texas and Ohio.
Yeah, right.
Back and forth constantly. But you know, it was really his vision because he traveled the world and he would see that small communities, a lot of them that were being revitalized or were coming back.
Yeah.
One thing they all had in common was a green space in their downtown, and it was really his idea. I was becoming Rotary president that year, and it was his idea about let's make a green space. And it started out what we're thinking, if you're from Waimo, we used to have the rally in the squares on Fridays.
Yeah.
And those would get rained out constantly. So Rich's idea was, well, let's cover it. Let's just make this a nice spot downtown, just a real small area. But now we'll cover it so that those concerts never get rained out again. Great idea. So we grabbed 16 Rotarians and started making a coming up with these ideas. We sold it to Rotary. Rotary's all in. Well, then it grew into what you see today downtown. Wow. This $4 million project that started out to be something. We were thinking a couple $100,000, and it just kept growing because we got the Lima Symphony involved, and we got the Lima Concert Band involved, and all these different venues.
Pieces that were already in place. Like, there was already a Lima Symphony. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but somebody needed to have the vision of how can we connect this to do something
bigger.
It gave people something to rally around.
Yeah. Sure. Right.
So that kind of grew into the vision for the Central District. And for those that are not local, could you just explain what is the Central District?
So the Central District started, it's on Central Avenue. That's why it's called Central District. It's a whole city block between Elm Street and Spring Street. It consists of four buildings. And when I purchased these buildings back when the amphitheater was just becoming a rendering, it was for the intent is that I didn't want it to fall in the wrong hands.
Right.
We didn't want any more body shops and junkyards down by this beautiful amphitheater that Rotary was building, and then eventually it would become a city park and the city would own. Not knowing what to do with it, it took several years and a lot of people involved in really coming up and brainstorming as to what this whole area could be. John Hafey, you know, he was involved too. He had Old City Prime and he owned part of Main Street right there too. Mm-hmm. So it was really, once again, Lima, that vision of we've got this beautiful amphitheater. Why don't we make this whole area kind of an entertainment district area?
Right.
So that's kind of where the district came from. Ours is a Central District because it's on Central Avenue. It consists of four buildings. One is, like I said, it's kind of a maker space, kind of a job training. There's a couple of the Lima News distribution centers in the back end of it. So they're distributing the newspapers out of there. And then Steady Does It Mechanical is in there. So it's a plumbing service.
He's caught the vision of
he's
doing
awesome.
What we're talking about.
Yeah, you know? He's absolutely awesome and giving a lot of his time and money just to better the community, really. So that whole vision and that area, you know, in that building is kind of the same. It's workforce development. And then there's a three-story building next door, and that's the one we're most proud of right now. So it's almost done with construction with the three-story. We're down to the elevator.
And open for business today.
It is open. It opened up right around Thanksgiving, right before Black Friday. They opened up that week before. It's got Winans Coffee and Chocolates, which is a franchise out of Pickwell, Ohio.
And they have a billboard over on the east side that says, returning to Lima 56 years later.
Yeah, so he's actually got a sign in his basement that we haven't got resurrected yet in Piqua that his grandfather's very first store was in Lima, Ohio.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, and who would have known? Nobody knew.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like his great-great or great-great grandpa.
It's not like you guys approached them being like, hey, 56 years ago. Yeah. That happened as an afterthought.
Correct.
Of like, oh,
he knew it. He knew it when he said he always wanted to come back to Lima.
Wow.
So this was a perfect opportunity. And then we had the European Bakery, A Touch of Europe, which is Nellie Metzger. Unbelievable.
Dude.
She had been in her basement baking cakes and goods, European, for probably, I want to say 7, 8, 9, 10 years, maybe she will tell you. And she's always wanted to have like a brick and mortar and, couldn't afford her own and had never been a real business owner. And we've just got a great partnership. I've just really gotten to know her. And it's really now, once again, it's about building businesses, building a community. We have Evdera Soap Shop that went in. He actually has a full-time job. His name is Michael Thompson. Full-time job at Charles River, but he's a chemist. And he started making his own bath salts and soaps. And I had met him one time at Froat Park. They had a pop-up for the Caribbean Festival last summer.
Yeah.
Loved his stuff. So I went, Michael, you need to open a store. No, I don't ever want to open a store. So I had him pop up for that grand opening where he is right now. He was there just for the weekend, supposed to only be there for the weekend. He came after the weekend. He's like, I want in. I want to stay. I don't want to leave.
Wow.
Well, the spot he's in, he can only have for 6 months because I already had it leased out to a boutique. So we have a couple women's boutique. It's called the Red Fox Boutique that will be going in July 1st. And she had already leased that space, but didn't want to pop up because she has a store over on the east side of Lima. So we are bringing her downtown. But Michael ended up, he's there till June 1st, but then he's going upstairs. So he's got even a bigger space, and he's actually launching two new product lines that he's now into. So he'll have a full-time store upstairs. So yeah,
That's very cool. New
business owner, Frank Cage, Cage Designs upstairs. Mm-hmm. He's got his studio up there, and then we have called the Modish Maven. Brand new business owner also. She's never been in business before.
Wow.
So she's excited. It's a huge women's boutique. And then on the third floor, we have our newest addition is a salon. It's called Infinity Hair Studio.
Wow.
She has been in business for about 10 years herself. But, you know, once again, so we have an event center possibly, mm-hmm. you know, we're working on right now to go upstairs, just a small 50 or under people possibly. And then we've got quite a few other things going. So exciting stuff coming.
Right, right.
And so that's the three-story building. And the building behind there, we have a new, it's called the Social House. It is a restaurant, bourbon bar going
I'm
in.
I'm really excited for that. I am really excited for
they
that.
They poured the cement, so all the underground's in. They poured the cement last week, even in that crazy weather. So the walls are going to start going up as soon as, probably not this week because it's so cold, bitter cold, but next week they're talking about starting to put the walls up. So we're hoping that will be open early spring, so maybe May or so, mid-May. That should be opened up. And then really what we're really proud of too is the courtyard going in.
Yeah.
So we kind of have this courtyard with, it'll have two fire pits. So people can sit around a fire pit, you know, have your drinks. It'll have a small stage at one end with a big screen TV so that the ball games could be played on there.
Tailgating.
It'll have cornhole, ping pong, just all kinds of games, things for the kids. We're talking about a little playground on the one corner. So once again, just an outdoor space where people can enjoy. So Drew Fields, my partner in this whole episode, keeps saying that the three story is a woman's haven now because of all that stuff. He's like, what do we got for the men to
got
do?
So now soaps, it's this, yeah. Got the boutique.
The boutique. Got the salon. Yeah. And you got the chocolate and the coffees and
the
he said,
can
so
go
the men
grab
could
a
go
beer.
Have the bourbon yep. and the beer and sit and watch a ball game and the kids can run because it's all fenced in area
yeah.
while the women yeah. are up doing their thing. So,
it's all about creating a space and creating yeah. retail and entertainment opportunities for people in Lima to actually go and enjoy something in Lima.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Stay downtown, especially when you have events going on, festivals and things at that amphitheater. It's all within the Dora, so everybody can have open container, mm-hmm. carry your drinks from one venue, you know, to the next. It's all part of the entertainment district, so the RTA is on board too with the trolleys that will be running, constantly all around the whole Dora area.
It's gonna be an exciting summer
because John Hafey and his Spring in Maine is on one side, then the amphitheater, then you're kind of sandwiched on the other side,
correct.
And it's a really cool block.
Yeah. So Spring Street's gonna be really cool. So the city, the city's working on the streetscapes, which are really nice. So part of Spring. Coming down to the amphitheater has been completed. So they got all the new sidewalks and curbs and streets and the landscape and lamps. So that's coming down starting in March, the whole length of Central Avenue.
Wow.
So it'll start at Elm Street right on our corner. It'll go right in front of us. So you're thinking new sidewalks, new crosswalks for pedestrians.
Yep.
And that's actually going from a two lane to a one lane. Mm. It'll have a bike lane. It'll have the back end parking on the street. They're just making it. It's going to be beautiful.
So I want to pause just at this juncture to connect some pieces for listeners to understand all the players and kind of the daisy chain of events in this, right? So Rotary, they were big into doing the Riverwalk, kind of about 20 years ago when that was done.
Yeah, probably at least, yeah.
And so, you know, then tackled another big project of doing the amphitheater. And when you endeavor to do something like that, it brings people out of the woodwork who have maybe been thinking about seeing that as a problem as well, but not knowing how to participate in fixing it. So now you have a partnership between public and private businesses and public entities joining together to do this. So you've got big donors from some of the major employers in the area that are saying, yeah, we'd get behind that because at the end of the day, it's going to help us recruit workforce into the
Absolutely.
Area to solve the problem that you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. You've got Allen Economic Development Group. You've got the city that's, you know, using tax dollars to be able to beautify and create more walkability in the downtown. And so it's just been this kind of critical mass because it's been happening for a while. And there have been probably some people that I don't even know about to give them credit for. They'll never get the credit, but they were instrumental in kind of inching the chains forward. And now things are really starting to snowball.
It is. And you can't even forget the state. I mean, even the state of Ohio has recognized, I mean, the Vibrant Grant that, you know, we ended up with $1.25 million of state money just because they were going to invest it in small communities and believed, once again, it's, you know, it's about livability. You have to have places, things for people to do, to want to come to your community, that want to stay and work. And, you know, Lima's got some of the best industries with our Procter & Gamble's and our tank plant and, you know, Ford Motor Company and the refinery and Nutrien. I mean, you could just go on and name all the companies we have here and the hospitals. We got the two of the best hospitals you could ever, you know, ever ask for in such a small community.
Right.
Yeah.
So, major stakeholders that are all playing their part. And it's creating opportunity in real time for investors and for business owners. And it's really creating opportunity for the future as well. But it's a slow build, and it's like at the bottom of the pyramid. It's a foundation that has to be laid, which has been really awesome. Let's just kind of end this portion of the show. Talk about how your involvement at a board level locally, how that has kind of pulled the curtain back to needs in the community that you otherwise weren't aware of, or what's been the benefit of being on local boards.
So that would always be my advice to anyone. If you really want to get involved in your community, get on local boards. Mm-hmm. I sat on probably 9 at one time. Now I've dwindled that down to about 6.
It's
still a lot. You're right.
You're busy.
But it's picking those boards that can help. So whenever I get on a board, the first thing I always say, like, first of all, why do you want me on your board? You know, And I have to know that I can add value to a board. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not adding value, if you don't have anything to give, that's why your time is too valuable.
Right.
So, you know, to me, that was the insight. And that's where you started forming those relationships and figuring out, you know, what does your community, how can I help in my community? And really, it's an army of people. Right. That's why I even said, you know, they said, well, you're the face of the amphitheater. Well, I may be the face, but that was an army behind me. You know, it was really, it's all the people that come together.
Yeah.
And I have to, you know, once again, I have to commend our city of Lima too. Mm-hmm. You know, the buy-in that our city has. You know, I look at Ian Coley and Kirk Niemeyer and our mayor. You know, they are just on board, and they're really, we're all working together with one vision, you know, and we're all rowing the boat the same way. And I think this is the first time for Lima in a long time.
When you get that synergy, it's powerful.
It is. It really is. And you can accomplish anything. You know, you really can do anything. It's really just that you have to have everybody rowing the same way. And it's not about me. It's not about John Hafey. You know, it's about the community and the things that you do. It's to make your community better. And like I said, even with the Central District, you know, Drew's my partner, but it's all of those tenants that are making that what it is. It's not us doing that.
Somebody really was masterful in putting Nelly's Bakery right there at the front, because it's cruel when you walk in, the first thing you smell is bread. Like,
second floor is even worse because you open up that door and it's like, ugh.
I know. Yeah. I'm getting taunted every day with just fresh baked pastries.
Nelly's knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable.
Well, and her stuff is so unique. You're like, another bakery. And maybe you picture in your head like a Panera or, I don't know, but you walk in there and it's just stuff that you don't even know what it is, because it looks so cool, colorful, different shapes and sizes. And you're like, what even is all this? She's like, well, you're going to have to try it all.
She's pulling people from Columbus now, Fort Wayne. I mean, they're coming from everywhere because you cannot get real European pastries. And she uses no preservatives. Yeah. No, you know, shelf life's not real long because, and most of it's, you know, a lot of it's gluten free. Mm-hmm. She uses very, very minimal sugars and all of her things. So, I mean, it's just, people are coming from everywhere just to try her stuff.
I want to encourage, just if you're listening, you know, whether it's this community or your own community, you know, the lesson here is get involved in something outside of the grind or what you think you're focused on, because it has so many benefits in this compound effect that's hard to put on a piece of paper. And it's rewarding and fulfilling. You know, it's something bigger than the metrics, the numbers, you know, stuff you get in the weeds on so often in business. It's been really fulfilling. So, yeah.
All right. We're going to jump into our smaller pockets segment. So, Tracy, why don't you go ahead and tell us about one of maybe your worst deals? So it could be in real estate, it could be within your business, It could be with the Central District. What do you got for us? Kind of what went wrong?
44 years of business. There's got to be a painful lesson.
So what went wrong? And then what'd you do to fix it? And, you know, how'd that shake out?
Oh, boy. So probably one of the probably worst mistakes I had made early on in business is that we thought that we were going to automated machinery. First of all, we had workforce issues, you know, people who don't show up for work. And then, you know, at that time too, I'm thinking that, you know, at the state level, or maybe it was even federal level, you know, that all these regulations were coming down on us. And it's like, you know, we don't want to have to pay this and we don't want to have to pay that. And I think that's when healthcare was getting forced on, that you had to provide healthcare.
Oh, wow.
And we couldn't afford healthcare back then, you know, to provide it for 50 employees. So it was like, okay, we'll just automate.
Right.
So we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars buying these big machineries that would make pallets and nail them all down. And all you need is one operator to operate this machine. And we put this whole line in, and it was probably a 2-year process of putting all in.
Wow.
Yeah, this wasn't something that happened quickly. You had to get the machinery, and then you were trained, and you have set it all up, and it was all computerized, and just tons and tons of time and money and effort we put in this.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 2 years invested in getting it up and running and ready to go, and probably lasted less than 2 years.
Wow.
We just found that it wasn't the right fit for us. We had a niche in the industry that was more about customizing.
So pallets. We
customize, sure. So like our Procter & Gamble's, they may have 4 different sizes and they're all customized for 4 different lines. And you couldn't just do that on a machine. Or it was a big switchover, a big changeover. And some pallets, some of our customers may only want 40 of this or 60 of that. Well, you can't change over a machine constantly for 40 pallets or 60.
Right.
So we decided very early on, after that huge investment, we ended up selling everything dirt cheap, got rid of it, invested in our people and training. And now every single pallet is still to this day customized one by one by hand. I'm reading a blueprint, you know, different patterns of boards, top, bottom, runners. I mean, no one knows until they go through a pallet plant.
Right.
You know, how much goes into it.
Yeah, you may see
them
all
over.
Which
if you were only doing one standard size, maybe the
machine
would be...
Automation's perfect. And there are a lot of pallet companies that still use automation to this day. Absolutely. But ours was just a little bit different. So that was probably one of the worst lessons, most expensive lessons that I had to learn.
Yeah, a couple $100,000 time.
So,
the time, once you calculate a couple years messing around with that, and maybe, I mean, those costs get expensive.
Yes.
So in hindsight, what it seemed like that was the issue was, you know, finding a way to be more efficient to make the pallets. Mm-hmm. But in hindsight, what would you have done differently if you knew that, okay, this wasn't going to solve our problem? I mean, would there was just kind of, you wanted that relief of the pain points of having to deal with, you know, added employee costs and management.
So you go through this, you know, especially as a business owner, you start thinking through things and you have to decide at that time, you know, we really wanted to grow and it wasn't the right time to grow. So it was really like swallowing your pride a little bit and saying, you know, this is not ideal time to be, growing our business. We don't know, you know, the economy was a mess. You know, like I said, we were in a presidential cycle then. They were pushing that healthcare down our throats, that, you know, mandating a lot of things for businesses, especially small, that would hurt small business.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, bigger businesses are different, but when you're in a small business, you know, you have to watch every penny of everything you do. And that was probably the scariest, you know, there's a lot of times we have to make decisions as business owners, you know, whether we want to grow, you know, do you stay the same size? We were even thinking at that point of downsizing, you know, and that's the last thing you want to do, but to survive, you know, you have to survive, you have to make smart choices. So,
yeah, that's good. That's really good stuff. I first want to commend all of your employees, who tear apart pallets. There was like, you know, when like pallet art was like a thing for like, I don't know, like 5-10 years ago.
People are still doing pallet walls.
Yeah.
They are. But it's not quite as mainstream as what it was. And so I remember getting, my father-in-law was a floor layer, so he'd always get these pallets that floor would get shipped on. So, you know, I was poor and had no money. So I was like, hey, I'm going to make something for my wife. Dude, that was the biggest labor of love. You make those things to last for a lifetime. I mean, ring shank nails, like it's just incredibly difficult. to tear apart a pallet. So
and Garrett, to tell you the truth, way back then too, we probably had stacks of boards. You could have came in and I could have gave you a couple handfuls.
Don't tell
of boards.
Me that. Don't tell me that.
That we're already done. We didn't have to do it.
Well, if I ever do anything pallet related, you're my first phone call. So very good. Very good. All right. We're going to go into our last show segment, what we call our little nugget. So, Tracy, this is the part of the show where you impart one practical takeaway or piece of advice. I know we've talked about a lot of things, so maybe try and do something a little different outside of what we've talked about so far to our listeners and how they can apply this to their business.
Wow. So probably one of the first thing that just now came to mind was even when I talk to my children or I talk to employees or we have meetings, it's like, when you're no longer here, what do you want to be remembered for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you want to be remembered? And I guess I try to live my life every day that way. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if something happened to me today and I'm not here tomorrow, what right. do you want people to remember you for?
Right.
You know, and for me, it's giving back to the community. You know, the community's been good to me and people have been good to me. And when you invest in people and you invest in your community, the rewards are outstanding. I mean, just look what you can do and you gather the right people together and you do the right things and you make the right, right. choices. And not everything's perfect. I mean,
right.
we always,
right.
and a lot of people think, oh, you know, they got it made and they, no, I mean, there's a lot of struggles that yeah. everyone goes through, but that's okay. You know, it's all about yeah. learning, but it's really about, you know, how do you want to be remembered when you're gone? You know, what legacy do you yeah. want to leave when you're not here anymore.
I think when you're young, that seems so far down the road and it's really not as far as way as you think it is.
Things can happen so fast. Yeah.
Stephen Covey, who's, you know, prolific author, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. One of the things he says in there is begin with the end in mind.
Absolutely.
And we often think of that in a microscopic way, you know, like for a 10-year business plan, but you're talking about a lifetime. What do you want your life to be sure. characterized by? And then you kind of reverse engineer and say, what do I need to be doing today that would set me up to be remembered in that way or to leave that kind of legacy?
Sure.
Which is awesome. You know, one of the exciting things about today was getting people to be able to hear what 44 years of business and community involvement can lead to, and then also educating people about this next chapter with the Central District. So we'll put all of those things in our show notes for people to reference, social media pages, just to see the exciting stuff. You guys have an awesome team pushing out some fresh stuff at the Central District. But one last question for you, I guess two. What's been one of the best resources for you in your personal development or in your business career?
Wow, that's a great question.
Oh, I stumped her.
You did stump me. What? Wow, I've had so many great mentors. A lot of them were previous business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of them are even local small business owners.
Wow.
It's really, you know, my mother and father were probably my biggest teachers, you know, growing up. I always said I wanted to go to school, go to college and become a school teacher. That was always my dream growing up, and it didn't work out because my mother and father had started this business, and I got it 2 quarters in, and they're like, you have to come back. You have to work here.
Wow.
To help, and that's what I did. So a lot of the things that I learned, I always say I was from the school of hard knocks because,
yeah, right.
yeah, you just learn it. It was trial and error. You know, I did hire a company out of New York early on that came in and helped teach a lot of the org charts and the process procedures and manuals and things like that we didn't have as a small company. So that was probably one of my biggest mentors also, you know, trying to get my business up and running and learning, but.
Which I'm sure at the time that felt like a really big jump and investment into your business. Cause that's a lot of money invested into an outside company coming in to teach and to consult. But it was the springboard. It was the foundation for you guys to keep moving up,
to keep moving growing. Forward. Absolutely.
And a lot of business owners and a lot of solopreneurs can get so narrow focused and so, you know, just looking at what's right in front of them. And they're like, well, I don't want to make that investment now. I'm going to wait till I grow right. the business and then I'll make that investment. But you're putting the cart before the horse.
Right. Yeah, make that investment early on. Absolutely. I mean, that really helped pave the way for us to grow and to become, you know. And once again, it's, you know, it's putting that good team behind you, too. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have the team that I have at Lima Pallet to be able to keep running while I'm working on all this development downtown, and then the team we put together downtown, I've got Bart Mills and Michelle Broadwater and my sister Kat. And, you know, it's really just building those teams. And I always say you're only as good as the people that work for you.
Yeah.
And even in my company, you know, I tell my employees that, you know, I'm only as good as you guys. You know, you're my reputation.
They need to hear that.
Oh, they do. They hear it quite often. They really do. Yeah, they hear that quite often from me, that I'm only as good as they are, you know, and sometimes they're so down on themselves. And like I said, they've come from a hard life, and it's like, no, it's because of you that we're good. And that's why we have, you know, the Procter and Gambles and the Ford Motor Companies and the Hondas of America. It's because of the work you guys are putting out. So I'm only as good as you are. So, and you know, that, and as business owners, sometimes we don't thank our employees enough or invest in our employees. They become numbers. And you know, everyone has a life and everyone has an issue, and it's, you know, lending that ear, it's listening, and it's working through those things. Those are where you get loyal employees. Like I said, I don't expect anybody to retire from Lima Pallet, but I'm going to have retirees because they're getting there because we invest in them.
It's, you know, somebody had said, if you want to go fast, you're going to go alone. If you want to go far, you're going to go with other people. And so it's like, do you want to go fast or you want to go far? And you got to choose. How can people find out more about the Central District? What would be the best way to do that?
So right now, they do have a website. It's not quite ready to go or launched yet, I don't believe. I think they're still working on that. But social media, Facebook is probably the easiest. I think it's the Lima Central District or Central District Lima, one of the two. I'm not a big Facebook person, but they are doing really, really well getting the word out, especially for ours and the up-and-coming stores that are getting ready to open up, and, and all of the restaurant getting ready this spring. So there'll be a lot to come on, especially Facebook is probably the easiest to get it. I don't know if we're on anything else or
I'm going to blow the whistle on you. If you follow the Central District Facebook page, you might see Tracy's grandchild on there.
By accident.
By accident. She's an admin for the page, and we're going to get that changed. So, no.
They need to restrict me for sure.
Which I think is so good. That's that team you're talking about, though. You've got people that'll handle that. And then the other way is go there physically.
Absolutely.
And, you know, one of the cool things about capitalism, democracy, is you get to invest with your dollars. You get to vote with your dollars.
Yeah.
And so when you go there and you support local business, you're voting for them and for their success. And it's not just like out of like, oh, I want to do this. When you eat some of those pastries and you drink the coffee, it's kind of like an addiction. You'll be back. So go there. It's really exciting. Tracy, thank you so much for jumping on today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.